I'll try and keep this short. So presumably everyone's read the paper. I just wanted to maybe put this in a slightly larger context and maybe draw out sort of five threads of argumentation that I think I'm trying to make here. This is part of a larger project that seeks to internationalize the study of authoritarianism in Indonesia during the so-called New Order regime of General Suharto from the mid-60s to the late 90s. And one of the goals of the project is to look at authoritarianism as being constituted in part by Indonesia's sort of transnational ties with Western governments, with multilateral institutions, as well as with non-governmental organizations, and looking at the ways in which we now think of as globalization both help to sort of bolster the authoritarian capacities of this regime, in part by helping to sort of create some of the administrative capacities of authoritarian rule, while at the same time sort of undermining them through their simultaneous empowerment of other forces that would seek to undermine authoritarian rule in Indonesia. And I've done lots of other writing about U.S.-Indonesian relations, much of it in a more traditional vein of diplomatic and foreign relations history. And I've done what I consider to be some of the sort of human rights hypocrites, writing that mostly criticizes U.S. and Western policy regarding Indonesia and East Timor in the 1970s as a way of highlighting the sort of selective nature of the U.S. engagement with human rights. In this paper, I wanted to do something different, which is to try and, in some ways, reframe the way that historians talk about how human rights sort of comes to places like Indonesia. And I think that there's still, and this is part a function of the sources, it's in part a function of the way that much of the literature on human rights has taken a sort of narrative perspective in which rights sort of come from the West and sort of get dispersed around to other parts of the world. And rather than asking sort of what happens when the Indonesian and American government or Indonesian government and others start arguing about rights, I wanted to explore sort of how Indonesians sort of come to their own understandings of rights and how they begin to make connections with this emerging community or discourse on human rights and what that sort of conflict tells us about how human rights emerge in a place like Indonesia. And one of my goals is to push back a little at literatures that suggest that human rights only come to Indonesia in the 70s, that it only comes as a function of debates about political prisoners. And there is a very small but I think useful literature that tries to push this back earlier in the century, mostly by focusing on feminist activism in late colonial Netherlands, East Indies. But I think also by trying to locate some of the early discussions about human rights in Indonesia within a broader context of anti-colonial activism, which is very much rooted in critiques of colonial political economy and social justice. These are inherently collectivist projects. They're not about individual rights, but it's about the legacy of colonial rule for the deprivation and social injustice that are experienced by collectivities of people that I think help to frame some of these debates. And so the paper seeks to sort of, in some way, sort of trace some of this early history of human rights and then start to engage more directly with what I think people have more easily recognized as the sort of modern engagement where you have NGOs are emerging, where they're starting to make transnational connections. And here I want to make a couple of arguments that I think help to, I think, throw some wrinkles in the recent literature on human rights. And I'll presume everyone knows the basic sort of narrative that I'm trying to tell about how there are these groups that emerge in the 1960s as Suharto comes to power, that from the very get-go, they have a much wider vision of human rights than we typically pay attention to, that it's not just a civil and political rights discourse, but it's a very strange, at least to Western eyes, way of thinking about rights in a far more sort of comprehensive format than others have previously appreciated, that doesn't disentangle civil and political rights from economic and social and cultural rights, but sees them as part of the same fabric that might be labeled under the broader rubric of social justice. But there are a couple observations that I want to make from the paper that we can hopefully talk about during discussion and that I think are relevant to some of the other papers that are being presented here today. One thing this paper tries to do is to show that in some ways we've misapprehended the sort of crucial links for thinking about how human rights sort of emerges in the post-colonial world. One of the things that the paper does is to try and tease out exactly how funding and foundation support ends up enabling the emergence of certain kinds of human rights activism. William Corey has a very good book about the Ford Foundation called Taking on the World's Repressive Regimes, in which he analyzes how Ford sort of comes to human rights. And one of the things that this book and some of my early excursions into the Ford Foundation archives has shown is that the way that human rights sort of arrives in Indonesia, Western human rights arrives in Indonesia, is not through amnesty, it's through legal aid work. And it's through the efforts of organizations like the Ford Foundation to begin supporting legal aid societies and legal aid organizations as a way of sort of doing human rights without saying that they're doing human rights. And so these foundation connections are incredibly important because Western funding is really the indispensable element for the emergence of human rights organizations with transnational connections in many post-colonial states. The second and sort of extended implication of this is that the paper argues that the emergence of human rights politics in Indonesia is also inseparable from the collapse or fracturing of development theory in post-colonial societies and in Western social science discourse. And really here the argument is that for 25 years or so, you know, varieties of development theory which are partly accounted for in modernization theory but can't wholly be accounted for in this, had apprehended post-colonial societies in a way that suggested that human rights were in some ways an obstacle to development. And there's a rich literature in the 1950s and 60s and through the early 70s that argues that basically, you know, either from the sort of third worldish perspective that you have to have economic and social rights before you can have civil and political rights, but more importantly from the vantage point of Western social science literature, that developing countries couldn't afford human rights. That there were resource constraints, that there were justice constraints, that in some way or another there had to be a sort of sacrificial generation within which developing societies could mobilize domestic capital, could suppress political activism, so that they could sort of generate the middle class and these sorts of things that in some ways either justified repressing civil and political rights or made it inevitable that these...